waiting for you to point to me, Rudy. You know what I'm waiting for? There we go. Hi, this is Penn Jillette. I'm on the Free FM, CBS Radio. 866-570-PEN, 7366, if we take calls, which seems very unlikely today. PennRadio@gmail.com and PennRadio.com is our web address. Sitting in the studio with me today is Gilbert Gottfried, waiting for a sandwich.
Yes. Yes, I'm waiting for it. And, play, and that jazz music I like. Yeah, it's very Buddy Love.
You would you like to sing the Buddy Love?
Oh, yes, yes. Let me see if I...
Up at dawn and sleepy and yawning, still the taste of wine. Then I remember your mind, and I've got a world that's fine. What's the hassle? I'll buy
you
the cat.
You skipped the second verse on the middle eight.
Wait, wait.
Yeah. It's the rushing to work thing.
Up at dawn and sleepy and yawning. I think it was right up.
What about Adam Bomb?
Oh, that comes later on.
Okay, go ahead. Continue.
Yeah, yeah.
Forget I even mentioned it. Go ahead.
Up at dawn and sleepy and yawning.
I was thinking you start with the second
taste
verse.
Of wine.
What's the hassle out by the castle? Yeah. And I remember.
What's the hassle? I'll buy the castle. We can live like kings. Then I remember your mind, and I've got a world that swings. Atom bombs, Cape Canaveral, and false alarms. Half the universe is up in arms. So I flip a little too until I'm holding you.
Then that's where the castle.
Right, it's
what's
before
the
that you left the verse up.
I'll buy the castle.
Well, but you forgot. There's even another verse after. What's the hassle? I'll buy the castle. We can live like kings when we're together forever. I've got a world at swing. I'd like to take you through this wild, wonderful adventure. Fly like a kite through space, no strings. I don't want to lose that bell that rings. I've got a world that you've got a world that we've got a world that swing.
Now, when you did that, Jerry,
yes.
were you making fun of Dean Martin in that?
I think it's so wrong. I don't know how people could think the love.
But you
that
broke
I had
you broke
Dean.
You broke up with Dean. You had the successful team, and you were the funny one. And then you did the Nutty Professor, where it looks like you're lampooning a jazz singer, someone with a womanizing point of view.
How
a lounge thing. It looks like you're making fun of him in that.
I cannot believe that the love that I had for this wonderful man,
but
that
you,
I would ever...
You hated him every second you were around him. I loathed him.
I adored him. And he adored me.
Now,
we loved each other unconditionally.
Now, the funny thing about this is, Jerry, that that when you were together working as a team, everybody thought you were the funny one. And then as soon as you broke up, Dean seemed to be the one that had the career in comedy.
Well, here, let me read you a review that really hurt me. Because it hurt me because it insults Dean, and I hate that.
How does it insult Dean?
Okay. Because they never recognize how brilliant he was. Here, this is from Variety. Jerry Lewis is an absolute brilliant comedy find, and absolutely not a word about Dean Martin. Times. Jerry Lewis, it's God's gift to mankind. Dean Martin is a nobody. Can I emphasize what they said? That hurt me so much.
You loved him, is that right?
I loved him more than a brother. More than I loved my parents. I loved Dean Martin.
But you didn't speak to him for a long time.
I didn't speak to him because I loved him so much that I didn't want to ruin it by speaking.
I see.
It's the kind of love.
Now, he really wanted you dead, didn't he?
He wanted me dead just because he believed in heaven. And he knew I'd be... Heaven was such a wonderful place.
Of all the comedy teams that have existed and hated each other with a purple passion, you know, Abbott and Costello.
Hated each other.
Hated each other, loathed each other. Martin and Lewis, of course, were the kings of hating each other.
Rowan and Martin.
Hated each other. Penn and Teller.
Yes.
Loathed each other.
Yes.
And both of them had good reason.
Yes.
And, but of all the comedy teams that hated each other, Smothers Brothers, not fond of each other.
No.
Really hated each other like brothers.
Noonan and Marshall. Hated each
Siegfried
other.
Siegfried and Roy.
Sandler and Young.
They all hated each other. But of all the comedy teams that have hated
Olsen
each other.
Olsen and Johnson.
Hated each other. Mason and Dixon. Loathed each other.
Lewis and Clark.
Hated each other. Lewis, well, Clark and Martin hated each other.
Gallagher and Sheen.
Hated each other. Gallagher and Gallagher. Hated each other.
The Ritz brothers.
Hated each other. Marx brothers. Yes. Stooges. Hated. All 13 Stooges.
The Hudson brothers.
Hated. Just loathed each other. Just that. But Martin and Lewis, of all of them.
The Wayans brothers.
Hated each other. The Marcellus brothers. Yeah. Hate each other. Really, almost. Well, I was once told that whenever there's blank, blank, and the blanks, that the blanks hate blank, blank. Always.
Gladys Knight and the Pips.
The Pips.
Hated each other.
Hated. And each individual Pip.
Like Sonny and Cher.
Hated each other. Even in death. She goes to a medium now in order to hate Sonny. Just hated each other.
Paul Revere and the Raiders.
The Raiders.
Featuring Mark Lindsay.
Mark Lindsay. Hated Paul Revere, who hated Mark Lindsay, who hated the Raiders.
It was intense hatred.
Intense. It was the triangle of fire of hatred. It was just all just hatred. Sacco and Vanzetti.
Yes, hated each other.
Loathed each other. Yin and Yang are not fond of each other.
Hitler and Himmler hated.
Not happy. Not happy at all. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
Loathed each other. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg.
Really disliked each other. Deeply. Watson and Crick. Hate. Purple passion. Hated each other. Loathed.
Sherlock and Watson hated each other.
But Lennon and McCartney liked each other.
Yeah.
They actually had mutual respect on both their parts.
The monkeys all hated each other.
But McCartney and Lennon very fond of
each other. Now they get along
very well. So much better. So much better than they used to. Because now John Lennon has finally admitted that Paul McCartney wrote everything. So it makes it much, much easier for him. Much, much easier. So Martin and Lewis didn't like each other.
Oh, we loved each other. See, it was the kind of love where you love each other so much that you hate loving each other because the love is so painful and so strong.
Now, what did it feel like when Sinatra brought Dean Martin out on the telephone?
It was just wonderful because I hated Frank Sinatra and I hate Sammy Davis Jr. And Joey Bishop and all of the Rat Pack.
For a while, though, you hated Johnny Carson in place of Joey Bishop in Ohio, didn't you?
Yes.
Just for that little bit of time.
Yes, I hated him for those few appearances that they made together. In fact, I hate Merv Griffin.
Who do you like, Gilbert? Who do you like? So, did we name anyone who's worked after 1958 in that whole little discussion we did? Are we right back to the whole thing? I want to point out, maybe you have comments on this.
Thelma Todd and Zazu Pitts
hated each other. Hated.
Lon Chaney Sr. and Jr. Hated each other. Yes.
But Lennon and McCartney.
Yes.
Very
always
fond of
got along.
They're very
Lionel Atwell Jr. and George Zucko. Hated each other.
Okay, now that's the first one I don't get. Okay. Who's that?
They were big in horror films.
The Kyoto Brothers.
Yes.
Hated each other. Hated each other. You know, the funny thing is.
The Warner Brothers.
Frankenstein and the Wolfman. Hated each other. And Abbott and Costello and the Mummy?
Hated each other. And they all hated Sid Fields. because Sid Fields could have let them stay in that housing development a little longer without demanding the rent from Lewis.
What are you talking
about? Okay, Sid Fields was the landlord on Avon and Costello.
Well, of course.
And he was the one famous for saying, "Boys, boys, you know you owe me last month's rent." We'll get it to you in a second, Mr. Fields. Now, come on, Lou, we got to make some money quick.
Are you sure you two guys know what you're doing? When you work in nightclubs around
here... Now, are you telling me the candle moved on that coffin? Look at this. Dracula must return to the grave before sunrise. Let's get this crate over to McDonald's House of Horrors. What, you telling me you saw Frankenstein?
You want to end with "I'll Never Walk Alone"?
When you walk through a storm, keep your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm, there's a golden light and the cool, tender sound of the lark. Walk on through the rain. Walk on through the storm, and you'll never, never walk alone. You'll never walk alone. Walk on, walk on, with hope in your heart. And you'll never, never walk alone. Dun, 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 dun. You'll never walk alone. See, now here's the difference between the telethon years ago and now that they screw up. Now they rush right to, like, the New York telethon that'll have, like, Tony Orlando or something. And they used to play the whole closing credits after "You Never Walk Alone," and they would play the jazzed-up version of "Smile." And that was my favorite part. Like, afterwards, you would... And so they screwed it up by not playing that anymore.
Now, he doesn't even stay awake, though, for like 3 days anymore.
Yes. And not even during the song.
Now, last year, did he sing "Never Walk Alone" at the end?
Yes. Yeah, only once he didn't sing.
When was that?
I don't remember the year, but one time he read...
How can you not remember the year?
1927.
Okay.
Okay. I think it was August. Anyway, but he ended the show with, like, reading some poem or something. It was very peculiar.
Was it the Hunts Hall poem on the nuclear war?
Yes. Ooh, ooh, chief. Yeah, and
who was the youngest?
And then another time, he ended the show by imitating Louis the Candy Star. And going, "Boys, boys, those FBI guys are after you." And then he would do Hunts Hall, going, "Ooh, ooh, let's get out of here." Ooh.
Do you have any impersonations you do of people who are living? I mean, is there one?
I don't think so. I think they're all dead.
Last night you were doing Laura Dern.
Yes, I do a brilliant Laura Dern. Oh, it's a dinosaur. Yeah, that was my Laura Dern.
Very good, very good. How much, over the years, how many telethons have you watched?
I think I've caught just about all of them.
Just about all of them?
Yeah.
When did he first start? It was in the 60s or something?
I think it was on a, I think, silent film.
Yeah.
And on a title card.
But here's the important, and I don't mean to, you know, embarrass you.
Yes. Go ahead and embarrass me.
Okay,
yes.
I will then.
Yes.
Over all those years.
I don't have a penis. Yes.
Over all those years.
I have a vagina.
Watching the telethon.
Yep.
Over,
yes.
We
yes.
all know that.
Yes.
Over all those years watching the telethon, how much money did you send to Jerry and the kids?
Not a dime. Yeah, not a dime. But in all fairness to Jerry, he did make me feel guilty
about
the fact that I never sent
him. Now, did you ever hear the time he talked to the drug dealers?
Oh,
that
no.
Famous,
this...
Yeah. In the middle of the night, I was watching New York, so it must have been like 1990 or
yes.
something, or maybe the late 80s. Like 3 in the morning when I was watching the telethon. And this is when I think he was still on a lot of drugs and very, very tired.
And he looked so much better when he was on the drugs.
Yeah.
When he was a Percocet addict, he looked great.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, yes. Quitters never win.
Yeah.
If you're on drugs, do not quit them.
It's like the Stones look terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't do an impersonation of Jerry Lewis. But maybe I can feed you the lines.
Oh, okay.
And you could do the Jerry Lewis. This was the...
Put it on teleprompter.
This was the very, very heartfelt Jerry. The very heartfelt. Yeah. And he said, I want to take a moment and talk to the drug dealers out there.
I do remember this.
Yeah. And he said, I don't approve of what you do.
But the money that you're collecting from innocent children and innocent people who you're selling your poison to, if just a portion of that could be sent to help my kids.
I was watching that at 3 in the morning in New York, and I was convinced, even having never done drugs, that I must be hallucinating. So I was calling people like crazy to see if they heard it. I thought it must have been some sort of gag. I mean, were the people in the control room going, no, it was just insane. I think of all the crazy things I've seen on television, and I've seen a few. Tom Snyder talking to Charlie Manson.
Yes.
I mean, and trying to decide which one of the two was crazy. Just going, which one of them? When he was going, Charlie, do you want to hit me? Is that what you want? Remember that? Remember Tom Snyder?
Yes.
Okay, that was one moment. But two of the crazy moments of all time were Jerry Lewis. One was his introduction of Frank Sinatra during his talk show.
Oh.
Remember Jerry Lewis's talk show?
Yes,
and
yes.
He introduced Sinatra by saying, here's a man who's taken stardom, blasted it out of our universe to the other side, and then brought it back to us.
Yes.
Mr. Frank Sinatra.
Yes, I do remember that.
Insane.
And he introduced Charlie Callis by saying, now I'd like to introduce a national treasure, Mr. Charlie Callis.
And then Charlie came out and said...
One of the best things he did on his talk show, some guy had died in show business who no one knows, you know, some guy behind the scenes.
Let's just say Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
We'll just use that name as a placeholder.
Gilbert Gottfried died. So it's some guy who was like a manager or a guy who worked on the crew that only Jerry and Charlie Callis knew, and they're both sitting there. And Jerry goes, you know, I think it's important to this wonderful man who passed on if we have a moment of silence. So here's national TV. Sponsors are paying billions for this show, and he's having a moment of silence. And then, to make it even worse, he says to Charlie Callis, we'll have a moment of silence. Have a cigarette. So here's a guy, I swear to God, here's a guy who most likely, I would bet anything, died of cancer. And he goes, we'll have a cigarette. And he takes out his cigarette case and opens it up to Charlie Callis. And they're both sitting there on TV smoking a cigarette, not talking.
And that's what we should be doing on the radio. This is, I'm with Gilbert Gottfried. This is Ben Gillette. We're on CBS Radio, Free FM. CBS Radio. PennRadio@gmail.com if you want to send an email. And PennRadio.com if you want to go to the website and hear more of the Mike Jones Enormous Orchestra playing that music. And I'm sitting here with Gilbert Gottfried, and we're talking about horrible, embarrassing moments on TV.
And I brought up one that you were able to look up. I remember this.
I'm very good on the Internet. If you want to look this up, it's the first hit you get if you do False Accused Rapist TV Hug.
Which is the name of my autobiography.
Yeah, False Accused TV Rapist Hug.
This is the most embarrassing moment. Phyllis George wins, hands down.
Okay, this was May 27th, 1985, I guess, is when it happened. You remember this still. It's a guy, Gary Dodson, 28, and Kathleen Crowell Webb, 23. We're sitting stiffly elbow to elbow on a couch facing interviewer Jane Pauley. His sentence had just been commuted after he served nearly 6 years in prison. After serving nearly 6 years in prison for raping Webb, she had tearfully recanted the rape charge in March after becoming a born-again Christian. First good thing I've heard about Christianity right there. Born-again Christians take away rape charges. Keep that in mind.
If she was a Jew, she'd let him rot in
prison. They were telling Pauly about the dramatic face-to-face meeting the night before, at which Webb said she could not apologize enough. I think that's true.
Yes.
She could not apologize enough.
Really? It would be impossible.
I would think so. To anybody to apologize. Who is the best at apologizing? Yes. I don't know. Would not be able to do it.
If you apologize for 10 years.
Straight. Yeah. With no breaks for, not even a bathroom break.
Taking a breath.
Not even a breath, no.
Forget it.
Not enough.
You couldn't apologize enough.
He's not a rapist, Webb said. He doesn't have the character of a rapist.
Yeah, because rapists do have good character.
Well, they don't. They do a really good Jerry Lewis. Yeah. That's one of their characters.
I've heard from a girl who was tragically raped that the man who raped her said, "My children are all that I care about. That one day I know that they'll be able to walk."
But they don't do just one character. Sometimes they'll get raped, you know, by Bud Abbott.
Yeah, they'll go, "Hey, we don't have enough money to have two lunches. Now I'm going to get a turkey sandwich, and you say you're not hungry." And this girl tearfully admitted this while she was being raped. The rapist was doing Bud Abbott.
Yeah,
and he even said, "Send this crate with Frankenstein's monster in it over to McDougal's House of Horrors."
It was McDonald's House of Horrors last time you said it.
It's McDougal's. Okay. I'm sorry.
Because, you know, we're going to get letters on that.
And the Westmores did the makeup for Abbott and Costello. Because they took it away from Jack Pierce, who created those just for all the monster fans.
Okay, good. He doesn't have the character of a rapist.
So rapists have great character.
They sure do. Yes. The painfully inarticulate Dodson insisted he was not angry.
Well, let's see.
Lying sack. I'm not angry.
See, for the past 10 years, he was getting raped in prison.
6 years.
Oh, 6 years. He was getting raped in prison for a crime he couldn't commit. He didn't commit. And now they're criticizing his personality.
That he bore more ill will against the system than against his false accuser. I don't get that. Because the system has to count on
if
people.
If the system hears a girl say, "I was raped, this is the guy who did it," then the system's doing the right thing, locking that guy up.
So this is Penn and Gilbert sticking up for the man.
Yes. Sticking up for the man. Good to your children, yo.
On CBS's show, effervescent co-anchor Phyllis George ended her interview by calling on Dodson and Webb to shake hands. And they did, limply. He's just trying to stay out of prison.
Yes.
But then George added, "How about a hug?" The astonished Dodson and Webb declined. In light of the continuing assertion of Illinois officials that Dodson is guilty, George's hug suggestion was inappropriate, to say the least. George later explained to Washington Post TV critic Tom Shales, "If you do something that bad, you have to talk right away to Tom Shales."
Yes.
You know what I mean? After Mariah Carey did Glimmer, she had to give Tom Shales a call.
The Holocaust.
Give Tom Shales a call. Hitler called from the bunker, sitting there with his dog Blondie.
Yes, I'm just about to take cyanide now, but is Tom Shales on the
Tom Shales?
Yeah.
Who's this?
Hi, Hi, it's me, Hitler.
Yeah, what do you want? I'm busy. I have to review Green Acres.
I just took some cyanide. I'll be dead in a second. Then they're going to burn my body. So I just wanted to tell you that Holocaust was a bad move on my part.
But not as bad as Glimmer by Mariah Carey. Thanks for calling.
That really sucked.
It's actually like, boop. You've reached Tom Shale's apology line. What egregious errors have you made? Leave a message after the tone.
That woman who drowned her five kids.
Call up Tom Shale.
As she was doing it, she said, look, this is hard. I have one hand holding my kid underwater, and the other hand is holding the phone. So you got to excuse me if I'm not clear.
What she did was she called Washington Post TV critic Tom Shales. Did you ever call about the Hollywood Squares?
I call everything about my career. I call about Celebrity Paranormal, Up All Night.
Gilbert, he has caller ID now. What is it now, Gilbert? What did you do?
It's like the bat phone.
Call Tom. Here's what Phyllis George said to Tom Shales. She had not meant to offend anyone, and that, in any event, the entire Dodson affair seemed to have become a charade.
Well, she actually asked them to do a charade of the actual charade. Yeah, yeah. And it was sounds like?
Two words. Sounds like. Grape. 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 Grape.
Yeah, yeah.
Grape.
A Celeste. She celested you? No. Venus. He took out his Venus.
I don't know what that's. Oh, movie title. Movie title. Everything you always learn about sex, we're afraid to ask.
Desertion. He deserted something into you.
He deserted. That's what Phyllis George wanted. Do a charade of the rape.
Yes.
Man, you know, well, next time you feel like you're in an awkward situation, that is to say, now, you compare that. Why don't you hug?
Just to say, from the second I was born, it's been an awkward situation.
Where's Phyllis George right now?
I think she's getting like a child molester to a three-year-old boy.
Yeah. Give him a little hug.
Yes.
A little hug there. I wanted to say this.
Jack, why don't you get on the school bus and hug all the children?
I should point out, you haven't noticed yet.
Yes.
But Michael Goudeau is not in Vegas talking to us. We're here in New York, and he's not even there. He got so sick of being sitting on the other end of the microphone with me talking to people in New York and paying no attention to him. He has just split. But we do have Patrick.
The tea's
does
good today. The tea's really good.
Yeah, Patrick does have a CD of Goudeau that he'll be playing a line now and again that you'll hear. But that's that. I also wanted to point out, you might have a comment on this. Do you know who Norman Borlaug is?
Ah, I love Norman Borlaug.
Okay, so you do. Yeah. You know who did makeup for Abbott and Costello's movie.
Yeah, no, I got no idea.
But I just want to tell you that very good news. The lame ducks in Congress came. I'm reading this from Hit and Run, which is the Reason Libertarian site. The lame ducks in Congress came through and voted to award the Congressional Gold Medal to Nobel Peace Prize laureate and plant breeder Norman Borlaug. This is from the AP. Borlaug, 92, is a native of Iowa. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970 for creating varieties of wheat suitable for developing countries that doubled and tripled yields and were resistant to disease. His work helped fight starvation in countries such as India and Pakistan. Dr. Borlaug is responsible for saving a billion lives around the world. He's an America's superhero.
Give or take.
Give or take. About a billion. A billion.
Yeah.
And the other thing about Norman Borlaug, which of course should have been obvious, but I didn't think of it the other day, someone said it was Norman Borlaug has saved more Muslims' lives than any other human being in the history of the world. So there's good and there's bad.
Yes.
He saved a billion people. And so Norman Borlaug finally got the Congressional Gold Medal. So when people are saying that Bush and the Republicans didn't do anything good, they did do that. What do you think about that, Michael Goudeau? I thought he'd have some.
Yeah, sure you did.
Oh, there you go. Sure you did. Okay. Well, we got Gilbert Gottfried here, and we're going to have Gilbert Gottfried some more.
Yes, and then I'll shamelessly plug my DVD.
We'll get to that. Packed. The whole next hunk, if you want. We're going to have commercials and come right back. We'll most sound like an infomercial for Gilbert Gottfried.
But it's not. It just comes up in conversation.
Very naturally. You watch after this. This is Ben Gillette and Gilbert Gottfried in New York City on CBS Free FM. CBS FM, Free FM, sitting here in New York City. Michael Goudeau is here virtually. He's got there's tapes of him, recordings of him.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure of that, Goudeau. And we've also got Gilbert Gottfried here. You're very possessed by Jerry Lewis.
Yes. That old black magic. Let's try that again. That old black. I'm not usually at a loss for words, but if you bear with me, I think I can explain. Some time ago, I stumbled upon one of the curiosities of science. I became so fascinated I couldn't turn back. I wish now that I had, but it's hard when you realize that you've discovered something that so many others have tried and failed to do. I had no control over what I said or did as Buddy Love. I didn't mean to hurt anyone. I never meant to do anything that wasn't of a kind nature. Learning a lesson in life, I guess it's never really too late, and the lesson that I learned came just in time. You might as well like yourself, because look at all the time you're going to have to spend with you. And if you don't like yourself, how do you expect anyone else to? I hope when you hear the facts of this case, you won't think too harshly of me, because I love everyone here, and I really wouldn't want to leave.
Are you done now?
Yes.
That was Gilbert Gottfried. He's Jerry Lewis. If you want to hear more of Gilbert Gottfried, that funny, go to GilbertGottfried.com. You might as well like yourself is easier said than done for people like Gilbert.
Yes.
GilbertGottfried.com. You want to spell Gottfried for us? I don't want to put you on the spot.
Okay. G-O-T-T.
It's meaning like, God in German.
It's like what you prayed to when the Nazis were coming.
Okay.
G-O-T-T fried. And GilbertGottfried.com and get Gilbert Gottfried dirty jokes.
How's that selling?
Like hotcakes.
Like the number 3 breakfast special?
Yes. So Gilbert Gottfried. G-O-T-T, fried,
okay.
.com.
And you, what gigs you got coming up, Gilbert?
None. My career's totally over. It's in the crapper now. I don't like to have my nose rubbed in it.
Aren't you doing any mall openings with Burt Ward?
I almost got one, but Butch Patrick, that bastard, steal the job right under me.
Butch Patrick, for those of you who don't know.
He was Eddie on the Munchkins.
In a hundred years.
Not to be confused with the fat kid from the Addams Family.
What's his name?
I don't know. I never watched the Addams Family. I always watched the Munsters.
Why'd you watch the Munsters? Because the Addams Family was the original, right?
I guess
so. The Munsters
so,
was the
I
knockoff.
Never liked the Addams Family.
Why? Because they were sexy.
Yes. They weren't Jewish.
Because the difference between the Addams Family and the Munsters, and the reason I like the Addams Family, is that the Addams Family were really happy being creepy.
They
liked being creepy and didn't care what other people thought, whereas the Munsters were trying desperately to fit in.
That's good, too.
That's good, too.
Yeah, all right. In that case, I like them better.
Do you do impersonations of everybody in the Munsters cast?
Well, no, but I do an impersonation of character actor John MacGyver.
who
those
was he?
People. He was in a lot of, like, these 60s comedies. He'd usually be, like, the hotel manager or something. He's short, bald-headed guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, Free FM, CBS Radio with Penn Jillette is pleased to present Gilbert Godfrey doing his impersonation of John MacGyver, character actor from the 60s who often played a hotel clerk. You're going to hear it right now. Gilbert, please, if you'd be kind enough.
Push, 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 sir. Yes, everything must be done according to schedule. Anything less than professional would not be tolerated. I am the head of this hotel. This hotel has a reputation to uphold, sir.
And because this is radio, Gilbert's applauding for himself like a chimpanzee. What other impersonations do you do, Gilbert?
Well, I do a pretty good Terry Thomas.
Okay. And now, ladies and gentlemen, CBS Radio, Free FM, Penn Jillette Show is proud to present comedian Gilbert Godfrey from GilbertGodfrey.com doing Terry Thomas.
Well, sir, as your manservant, I feel it's only fair to warn you that you look a bit tired today. And you look like you had a vile night. Hopefully you had a lot of fun with the ladies.
That was my Terry Thomas.
Very nice, very nice.
Yes.
And now, CBS Radio, Free FM, Ben Jillette, pleased to present Gilbert Godfrey doing Paul Lynde.
Oh, my goodness. You're an animal.
And how's your Floyd the Barber?
Oh, well, it's a tough one, but I think I...
Yes, Andy. Oh, yes.
And then it was after the stroke, it was...
Andy. Yes.
Like, because Floyd the Barber had a stroke, sort of like...
E-I-E-I-O.
With a cough, cough here, yeah. and a drool there. Hair cough here, a drool.
Floyd the Barber had a stroke.
E-I-E-I-O.
Floyd the Barber had a stroke. E-I-E-I-O.
Oh, the barber had a stroke.
You were saying.
So they used to put. But sometimes they'd have Floyd the Barber after the stroke, because you know Floyd the Barber had a stroke. And sometimes they'd have him sitting in the barber chair, and they'd like sort of glue a newspaper to his hand to hide the fact that his other hand was paralyzed. And so he'd be holding a paper. Other times they...
You're giving away a magic trick.
Yes!
The Daylight Sands gimmick. He's giving it away on the air.
Hey, if not me, David Copperfield is going to be doing this in Vegas, and I beat him to it.
If not us, who?
Yes. And another time they built him this wooden plank behind his back that held him up to make it look like he was standing.
How do you know this?
Yeah. It basically the same way they did it to Jesus. Jesus and Floyd the Barber. In fact, Jesus' last words...
They had a conversation, the two of them, didn't they?
Yes. When Jesus was on the cross, he screamed up to God,
Yes, God. Why is thou forsaken me?
And then right before he died, he went,
Andy. Goober is looking for you.
And then he died. You know, and if you go into some churches, you see Floyd the Barber hanging on the wall, holding a pair of scissors.
So, Floyd the Barber had a stroke, E-I-I-O. And sometimes he would glue him to a plank.
Yes.
Put a paper to
sometimes
they'd
nail him up.
Were you going
because
to...
the Jews worked on that show.
The Jews hated Floyd the Barber.
Floyd the Barber. A lot of people try to blame the Romans for killing Floyd the Barber, but I still insist it was the Jews.
Now, Floyd the Barber had a conversation with Bob Dylan, didn't he?
Yeah, they tried to kill... They tried to kill Jim Nabors, the Jews, because Jim Nabors tried to spread the word of God to the town of Mayberry. So all the Jews in Mayberry, and they were a sizable amount, surprisingly, they all rounded him up and nailed him to a cross.
Now, do you do Jim Nabors?
And he, yeah, yes, as a matter of fact. You know, Christ, right before he died, yelled up to God, "Golly!"
And then a light came out of the sky, and his voice changed entirely, and he sang.
Yes, but right when the light was appearing, he said, "Shazam!" And he said, "Citizens arise, citizens arise." And then he started singing in an opera voice, which was, you know who was the other one who used to do that?
Crazy Guggenheim.
Crazy Guggenheim.
Frank Fontaine.
Yeah, because then that used to be like...
Isn't it fortunate that the one person that understands what you're talking about is in the studio with you? Did that work out really well? That the one person who'd be able to jump from Jim Nabors to Frank Fontaine and give you Crazy Guggenheim just like that, the one out of the hundreds of thousands of people that could possibly be listening to the radio, the one person who knows what the hell you're talking about
on the planet
happens to be sitting here in the room with you. Do your Frank Fontaine hunk,
but
Gilbert.
First, you have to do the Gleason leading it into it.
Please do.
You know, he would sing some song under his breath.
Oh, you Jew.
Yeah, oh. And then he'd go, hey, Mr. Donahue.
No, he was Mr. Donahue. No,
he was...
Joe.
Yeah.
Joe the bartender. I'm sorry.
Joe the bartender. And he'd go, "Hiya, Mr. Donahue. And how are you today? Oh, look, it's Crazy Guggenheim."
"Hey, Joe. Hiya, Mr. Donahue."
"So how are you doing, Crazy?"
"Well, last night I was talking to Maria Farquhar."
That used to be a funny joke on that show, to say Farquhar as a name. And then he'd go, "All right." He'd, like, wipe his eye like he's the drunk spit on him or something. And he'd go, "All right, sing a little song for us, Crazy."
"I'd be glad to." "In her Easter bonnet, with all the frills upon
now,
it."
Did Frank Fontaine sound precisely like Jerry Lewis when he sang?
And then he would sing, "Up at dawn and sleeping and yawn and still."
Floyd the Barber had a stroke. So, Gilbert, we have 1 minute left.
Okay.
Have you explained...
Gilbert Gottfried's dirty jokes on GilbertGottfried.com. Yes, okay.
Okay, yeah. You got that enough?
Yes.
You happy? And where are you playing? Aren't you playing in Rhode Island or something?
That's what women say to me. You got that in enough? Are you happy? Okay, good.
Any other impersonator? Who would you like to go out as?
You mean, how would I like to die?
Yeah, you got 30 seconds.
I'd like to die like Christ.
Like Christ?
Yes. I'd like to be remembered. I'd like to be worn around people's necks.
This is Penn Jillette. Free FM, CBS Radio. PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio.com. And, of course, GilbertGottfried.com. Floyd the Barber had a stroke. E-I-E-I-O.